Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This episode of Long Night with Vish Khanna is brought to you by Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, Planet Bean Coffee, CFRU 93.3 FM, and Granddad's Donuts, and was recorded before a studio audience on Friday, March 29th, 2019.
Thank you very much for being here. It's nice to be here. The season finale. Wow, that's kind of sad, isn't it, James? It's the end.
Well, hopefully it's not the series finale.
We always get canceled after every season, and then they bring us back for diversity, I think.
We're like Parks and Rec. We've just had a lot of series finales, and then we just come
then
back
we come
mysteriously.
Back. Yeah. Well, it's nice to see you all here, and without further ado, I'd like to introduce our first guest. Our first guest tonight is a musician, media personality, gamer, and the co-host of the Discovery Channel Canada show, Vintage Tech Hunters. Please make some noise for Sean Hatton, everyone. Sean.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
What's that?
Thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, you're back on the show.
I'm back.
You are a repeat guest.
I've endured another format of this show where it was a little more video intensive.
You use the word endured.
I've endured the show. I've come back. I enjoyed it, obviously.
Well, I don't know if you did. You used the word endured.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
It's great to have you on the show, and congratulations. So since the last time you were on the show, you now have your own show.
Yes.
Is it still going on? Everything's fine with Vintage Tech Hunters?
You could watch it still. It's it's in reruns of the first season. It aired starting November 5th of last year.
Yeah.
And wrapped up just around the Christmas holidays. Discovery did this big day-long marathon. So even though I was at my parents' place for Christmas and I was standing in the living room, they were like, "You're in the way. You're in the way. I'm watching you on TV." And I'm like, "I'm right here."
That's tough love.
It's rude.
In its own way, yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. Your parents are in Brampton?
They are.
Where are they from originally?
My dad's from India. My mom's from Pakistan.
Nice. Well, yeah. My parents are from India as well, and I grew up in Cambridge. But Brampton, was that a good place to grow up in? Is it an artistic person? I know Scott Thompson from Kids in the Hall grew up in Brampton.
Well, let's use this word again, endured. I think a lot of artistic people have endured growing up in a not-so-artistic town. You know, it's a working-class town.
Yeah.
There's, of course, Mayfield High School, which a lot of people have gone to. Michael Cera went there as well.
Did you know Michael Cera in Brampton?
No, but he almost ran over me and my dog once when I was walking her up the sidewalk, and I was like, "Who's this fucking wanker like riding his bike on the sidewalk?" And I looked at him and I'm like, "Oh, it's Michael Cera."
Was he like, you know, famous Michael Cera?
Yeah, he was. This was post Scott Pilgrim. He was still like hanging out in Brampton because it was around his birthday, I think. Yeah, his folks still lived there.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to disparage poor Michael Cera. Are you
He's
okay?
He's not poor. No. Are you kidding me? The dude's got more money than both of us
right,
put together,
that's
at least.
That's true. That's probably yeah. fair. Anyway, so you came up in Brampton. How did you get into like kind of arts and culture?
I think just kind of accidentally. I've always been interested in, you know, listening to, playing music. And then also, I played a lot of video games growing up. I don't know if anyone else can kind of relate to that. But there you go. I somehow conned my way into video game journalism. I did journalism in college and then ended up on a TV show called The Electric Playground, which is still running in YouTube format. The guy who started it, Victor Lucas, is still doing that. But it was one of the longest running Canadian TV shows about video games. In fact, probably the longest running show about video games, period, in the
right.
world.
That's a big thing. I mean, people love video games. They have for some time, but that's like that might be the most mighty industry right now. It seems indestructible.
It's a tough industry to be in as a creative person. You know, studios do still close, unfortunately. There's a lot of pressure on game studios to make AAA games, have them sell, you know, millions of copies around the world. But it is a good industry, and obviously it's been around for a long time. And, you know, I grew up in the age of like where video games were becoming a thing, you know,
right.
the Sega Nintendo wars of the 90s and that kind of thing. What was cool about the Electric Playground for me when I was a kid watching it is it was my only way to see video games in action where I wasn't at a friend's place or I wasn't playing it myself, because, you know, the internet wasn't really a thing and you could only see video games in a magazine format. So it'd be like these blurry screenshots. And then along came
they
the
made magazines
playground.
Where they took photos of video games and then
oh, yeah.
put them in the magazine.
Yeah, yeah, and like Nintendo Power magazine, you can enter your high score in Nintendo Power, and they gave you tips of how to take photos of the screen. Like it had to be a dark room, turn the flash off, take all the photos on your camera roll, like use all 24 photos, because they might not turn out right. It's hard to take a photo of a CRT screen.
Sounds like a scam to me, all of it. Turn your lights off.
You know, it was a scam to sell film
right.
and develop film. You know?
Right.
And meanwhile, like I would have to sneak my mom's camera when there was like two shots left to prove to my friends that I beat Street Fighter 2 on the hardest setting, because you get like a special screen. And then those photos didn't turn out, so they just thought I was lying.
Now, just so we're clear here, you're a grown man.
I'm 40 years old now. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this video game stuff is in your past?
No, I still play video games.
You play
games.
Video
yeah.
games a lot?
Yeah, I played video games today, actually.
Should
yeah.
you be admitting that?
I'm admitting
these
it,
I don't.
Yeah.
So do you still engage in what you call video game journalism?
I you know, I tweet about what I'm playing. And
does that count as journalism?
I guess. I mean, lots of people take people on Twitter seriously. And
that's true.
Why
that's
not
true.
Take me seriously? I mean,
but
look
this,
at me.
This was your claim. Like, this was an important step, I suppose, in raising your profile, your video game engagement.
Oh, yeah. I mean, lots of people wouldn't even know. I mean, most people here don't know who I am or care, but...
How about a round of applause for Sean Hatton?
But
From Brampton.
Brampton zone. I guess I still do maintain some sort of video game cred, let's say, because
right.
I'll tweet like, oh, I just picked up the new No More Heroes game, and people will reply like, what do you think? What do you think is good as the last one?
They trust
one?
Your judgment on
yeah.
the video game.
Yeah.
So your show that you have now, Vintage Tech Hunters, there is occasionally a moment where you'll get to play an old school video game, right?
Yes.
But that's not the premise of the show. Tell the people who haven't seen the show, what's the show?
Okay, so the premise of the show is me and my business partner / friend, Bohush Blahut, which is his real name.
Just be careful. That's a Czech name.
It's a solid Czech name. You know, I don't want to insult
Can
the,
you say it again, though? I missed it.
Bohush Blahut.
It's a good name.
It's a very good name.
Yeah.
And he's a good man as well. He's got a big, commanding voice and... I'm not doing it justice, but he and I, we travel across North America in a comically large panel van.
Dumb and Dumber.
Basically, yeah, but it's not as cool as that one.
Right.
I mean, if it had like the fur and stuff on
with
it, you the know,
leg
the dog
and
thing,
the,
yeah. No, it's just this big, basically like a Sprinter van.
Yeah.
You know, I could be kidnapping people, but I'm actually just going and going to flea markets and dusty barns and basements and swap meets and antagonizing old white men into giving me their technology for a good price.
You end up bartering a lot with white men.
Well, yeah.
Given our background,
it's, you know,
of bartering with white men. I will say that's in my blood.
Yeah.
Did you barter a lot with the white men?
Well, yes. And some white women as well. And some.
Oh, that's why you kicked it up a notch.
And some people of color as well. I mean, right. I don't want, like, there's a good representation, but let's be honest.
So you're bartering for people's junk, their detritus, the refuge, the unwanted and undesirable items, the stuff a toilet would reject.
See, the problem is the people that I'm talking to.
Have I mischaracterized the show?
Well, you know, you can have your own interpretation of the show. You've seen it.
I've seen the show.
I think from...
But you're junk collecting a little bit, right?
It's junk, yeah. But it's cool junk. The stuff that sticks out to me is like things that I feel are, you know, this is an interesting piece of technological history. You know, back in the day, you would have a device that would just... You know, it would just measure amperage, and that's all it would do. But it was this beautiful, intricate, ornate wooden box with glass and, like, really nice gold gilding and all sorts of unnecessary stuff. It's like an actual piece of art. Like, someone spent a lot of time building this amp meter.
There was a machine profiled on your show that was on the cutting edge of making dog tags, which I found.
Oh, yes.
It's like, it looks like a typewriter. Yeah. But before I learned on your show... That before the dog tags that the military people used to use, like, someone would hand hammer them, and then they invented, what's it called? Do you remember the name of the machine?
I don't remember
either. Anyway,
the name of
it. But there's the camera gun from World War I.
That was ridiculous.
And you found that in, like, a guy's, like, what was it, barn or something?
Yeah, the camera gun was in a weird junk shop in Welland where this guy basically just had everything. Also, a disturbingly large number of Jim Lee variant cover X-Men number one from the 90s. Like, he had hundreds of them. And I'm like, this is the one with the fold-out cover. This was going to be worth something. And he just had hundreds of these.
Were they counterfeit or something?
No, they were the real deal.
Because, like, he wanted $8,000 for that camera gun, right?
He wanted a lot for the gun, and we don't, like, look at me, I don't carry that kind of money.
You walk around with, like, what, $2,000 on you, it seems?
I got $2,000 sometimes, yeah.
You have it on you now?
No.
Okay, you're safe.
No.
So you're bartering with these people, and they've got what they think is valuable, and then that's the part of the show I don't understand. You're buying it to make a profit, but we never see what happens with the profit.
Well, I'm still waiting for some of the profit, to be honest. I mean, we've got a lot of this stuff in storage, and people who have seen the show know, like, okay, you bought this pinball machine, and they contact us, and they're like, oh, how much do you want for this pinball machine?
Oh.
Your
show is basically eBay.
It's eBay, the TV show, starring me and Bohush.
Right.
But unlike eBay, where a lot of the antagonism is in, you know, the post-purchase experience,
that's right.
The antagonism in this show is before the purchase. You know, sometimes you buy something on eBay and you get it, and it's like, well, this is not really what I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And you kind of leave a neutral feedback, and then people get kind of catty with you back and forth. We do that before we actually buy the thing. And sometimes we don't actually buy it because people are, you know, they want a little too much. The problem with any sort of item where people ascribe a value to it, they've got this emotional attachment. You know, like, this was my Sega Genesis when I grew up. It's worth $200. It's like, no, it's not worth $200.
Well, did you not bring something with you?
I did. So what I brought was something I found in a flea market just outside of Ottawa.
Okay, do you want me to help? Do you need help?
I think I'm okay for now.
Okay.
Okay, you know what? You better hold on.
Okay, yeah, I thought so. So this is something you found in a flea market near Ottawa. Oh, look at this. Wow, it's an Omnicord.
Oh, wow. Applause for the Suzuki Omnicord. So,
Linda, I don't know that the applause sign needed to go up for the
Omnicord. Omnicord applause.
It has no feelings. I mean... Always upping the applause ante, if I might say.
Oh, thank you very much.
Anyway, I'm familiar with Omnicord. You know who uses these a lot? Daniel Lanois. Do you know him?
I do. Well, not personally, but I know of him.
He uses these all the time.
And he makes beautiful music.
Ambient kind of tones.
Yeah. Do you know who else uses this?
Yes.
The Flight of the Conchords.
Yes.
In fact, Jermaine Clement has a very large collection of Omnichords. There's only like 5 different models, but he's got a lot of them.
So have you tested this one? Does it work?
Oh, yeah. We tested it as soon as we found it. It worked. I made a song. It wasn't a good song.
Is this all of this an elaborate ploy to make me buy this Omnichord from you?
I actually bought this Omnichord myself.
Oh, it's yours.
So it's okay. It's mine.
Do you want to play something for us?
I need to plug it in first.
I don't think we have power.
There's like a power bar right there, man.
Oh,
I see it.
So, okay.
Yeah.
We probably should have worked this out before the show started.
Okay, let's...
We were just killing 20 minutes doing nothing.
Yeah, we're just like, well, we'll start the show
eventually.
Does it
not take batteries or something?
It does, but the battery part doesn't work, and I also... It takes 8D size batteries. No,
that
wait.
It's not a common number of batteries or battery
it's
types.
It's C size batteries, but it might as well be D.
Who's
Can brewing
I,
D
I
batteries? So no, they didn't have lithium ion back then.
Well, how about, okay, you know what? Maybe we can play it later.
We'll do.
Which
we'll
is
do
code
that.
For yeah. We're not going to hear from this machine.
It's
on the
it's
show.
Beautiful.
But can I show you something? Tell
yes.
me what this would be worth.
Okay.
I have on my wrist a Timex Iron Man watch.
Nice.
That I used to say, Dad, what time is it? And he'd say, pardon?
Hammer time.
And I'd say, what time is it? He's like, God, stop asking what time it is. I'm just going to buy you a watch. So my dad loved me, by the way. He loves me, but he didn't want to hear from me. So he bought me, I was like 6 years old wearing a wristwatch, which is probably a little unusual. But anyway, I've only ever owned Iron Man watches my whole life. And this particular model I purchased in 1999. It is the 20th anniversary of this watch. It is the Cal Ripken of wristwatches, if I might say.
Nice.
What would this wristwatch be worth on your show if you were to find this?
Well, we did buy a wristwatch. We bought one of the very first LED vacuum tube wristwatches, and that was worth quite a pretty penny. But these were very mass-produced and... you know, they say Timex takes a licking and keeps on ticking. And these do actually last a long time. Yours is 20 years old. I had that same one as well.
Yeah.
So seeing that brings back a lot of personal memories. So I think because I have this emotional connection, I might be fooled into paying a little bit more. But I'd give you $20 for it right
20
now.
$20?
Yeah. That I do carry that kind of money with.
You know, I know it can hear me right now, and I don't want it to malfunction.
I don't really want to steal that watch.
No. I was going to say, I've been so fearful that this watch was going to stop working that I actually bought a backup.
Nice.
And it looks exactly the same. And you know where I got it? eBay.
eBay.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. You know what watches actually went up in value quite a bit? Remember the Transformer watches? It was like a little robot that turned into a square watch. You could pop them off the wrist.
Are you having an acid flashback? I don't remember.
It would turn into a robot.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember calculator. I had a calculator watch.
Oh, those
this
are
has
cool.
Been Watch Talk with
Watch Talk.
Vish and Sean. We do have to take a break. So I'm being told by my producer that it's time to take a break.
I didn't see your producer say that. But
is there any? I'm just bartering. I'm bartering with the producer. Is there anything that you want to tell us to look out for in terms of the show might come back? That's one thing.
Yeah, we're waiting to hear news about season 2. The folks who've put the show together, they are selling it worldwide. So I'm sure people who are going to be able to watch me with a sexy Spanish dubbed voice or a French voice, it's going
Are you
going
to do the dubbing? That would be cool.
No. Oh. No, it's not me, unfortunately. I'd like to.
I wish we could get into this more because this whole show about history and tangible objects from the past in relation to our existence now, where we're being conditioned to get rid of everything tangible and this forced technological erasure.
Yeah.
It's getting into grad school territory.
Well, there is the conspiracy theory of planned obsolescence,
yes.
Right? Like Apple releases a new phone and suddenly your old phone doesn't really work as well as it used to.
Yeah.
Like, is it just in our minds or is it true?
And just, my phone stopped working just now when you said that.
See?
I was monitoring.
See, but something like this, is decades old and it still works as good as it did
right
the first day. You just got to keep stuff clean, treat it with a little bit of love and respect, you know?
You said that like a real dad.
Yeah.
Or a parent. Just
Vish, take care of your shit.
Take care of my shit, okay.
Yeah.
Where can people learn more about you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter. It's at Megashaun, MEGASHAUN. And enjoy my fart jokes and jokes about robots and stuff like that.
He's a wonder and a gentleman, and I'm happy he's back on the show. How about a round of applause for Sean Hatton, everyone? We're just going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Baroness Von Sketch Show will be here and other stuff, so stick around. Thank you very much. Back. How about another round of applause for Sean Hatton? Mega Sean. Thank you, Sean. All right, it's time to move our show along. Our next guests are incredible.
Stop the show, no!
What? What's going on?
There's a guy up there, backstage, and he's eating samosas.
That's fine. What's wrong with... Why are you coming to me with this, by the way? It's awkward. What? I'm not the samosa police. What's the big deal?
He dipped them in mayonnaise.
Jesus, Hindu Christ. That's an outrage. I'm going to go deal with this. I do have a samosa authority. James, take over the show. I'll be back.
What? Finally. All right, so I've been sitting here for like 6 years not saying anything, so if it's cool with you, I'm going to take advantage of this opportunity while Vish is attending to an emergency. To tell you a little about myself. I'm getting to be an old man. I'm getting up there in years. And I've realized now that the whole process is just passing a series of milestones that you're not going to reach. Like, oh, I'm not going to be a professional athlete. You know, that one came early for me. I was 7. You know, I'm not going to make that top 30 under 30 list. But I recently passed a sort of disturbing milestone, which is I've realized that I'm too old for the apocalypse. You know, yeah, it was the end of the world comes. We all imagine there's going to be like that ragtag group of survivors, and we all picture that we're going to be amongst them, right? Nope, not me. But James, you might say, if you remembered my name. You know, in the group that we're picturing, there's an older guy. And, I mean, be honest, the older guy you're picturing in your group, he kind of looks like me. And I do admit that I do maybe give off a bit of a doomsday prepper vibe. But no, the guy you're picturing is a rural beardo. I am very much an urban beardo. The only thing I can forage for is records. That's it. And it's because I haven't learned any skills, any survival skills or arguably other skills. It's because I've been a magazine editor my whole life. And yeah, that does not prepare you for the end times.
Apocalypse magazine.
You know, it's funny because like if you're making a wish list at the end of the world of like useful skills to have around, like people that could do good stuff, like, it's pretty far down the list before you get to a real knack with the written word. That's low. That's not even me yet, either. I'm still a few more jobs down for when you're worried about your spelling and grammar and you don't want to be dangling a participle in the end times. That's... I'm very useful then. I'm very useful in that scenario. My wife travels a lot for work, and she recently went away for a couple weeks... left Eric and I at home alone, just the two of us. And we have a very happy marriage, but I do confess that I live in terror of my wife's disapproval. And so I figure that the best way that I can demonstrate my core competence as an adult human is by the state of the house when she returns, right? Like, that's the best way to demonstrate that I've been on top of things while she was away. I did briefly consider recreating the house exactly as it was the moment that she left. You know, when you go away for a long time and it's the second you walk back in, you're just transported back to the moment that you left with the half-drunk glass of water on the counter and the pot soaking in the sink and the phone cord that you forgot that's just sitting on the table taunting you. So I was going to do that, but it was going to take a lot of work and reference photography. It wasn't going to have the impact that I was going for when she walked in. So the vibe I decided to go for was really responsible house sitter. I figured like that was the right sort of standard to try and reach. Eric, I wasn't worried about. He's 10 now. He's a good boy. He's very independent. And now that I think about it, I barely saw him the whole 2 weeks that she was gone. I mean, every once in a while he'll show up and cry for attention or whatever, but you just shove a cookie in his face. He's fine. Eric's a dog. I may not have clarified that earlier. So in preparation for my wife's return, I set aside 2 days to clean the whole house. I mean, let's be honest. I didn't do 2 days worth of work. I smoke a lot of pot. I take a lot of breaks. But over the course of 2 days, totally wired, like dusted, cleaned, organized, filed, the whole bit. And I'm super proud of it. I think I've really nailed it this time. And so she comes home and she's in the house for approximately 120 seconds. And she appears holding a terracotta pot. And she says, "This is dead." Now, I've just been over every inch of this place over the last 2 days with breaks. And I have never seen this thing before in my life. Like, Could someone have snuck it into the house somehow? I think this plant is a plant. I'm a very progressive person, politically speaking. I'm woke. But I have to say that as a straight white guy, that I do struggle with my wokeness sometimes. I mean, I want to be out there on the vanguard of change. Like, I want to take a leadership position in making things better for marginalized communities. So I racked my brain, like, what's the best thing that I can do? And I finally figured it out. Nothing. No, seriously, nothing is the best thing that I can do. If anybody needs to take a seat on the bench, it's white guys. I mean, I don't know if you guys have studied a lot of history. I've been looking into it recently. We've been on the wrong side of some really terrible things. It's true. Don't just take my word for it either. Ask any woman of color if white men should sit down and shut up. You have a vigorous nodding coming back at you, at least. A vigorous nodding. So my wife went off to the Women's March, and, you know, because of my wokeness, like, I totally want to be there. I love everything about it. I love the hey, hey, ho, ho, something we dislike has got to go. I love all the clever signs. Like, we all remember all the regime change that's been brought about by a really bitingly worded sign. You know, I wanna be there and raise my voice in solidarity. But again, woke, also recognize that there may be women there who don't appreciate me just like flaunting my toxic masculinity all over the place. And I don't wanna spoil anyone's good time. Like, that's an empowering space that should be respected. And so I shouldn't go. I should not go to that march. So it turns out that I get credit for wanting to go. I get credit for recognizing I shouldn't go, and I don't have to go. So off my wife goes to change the world, and I get the afternoon off. I have to say, my favorite thing about being woke is the naps. Oh, Vish's returned from the samosa emergency.
Yeah, hey, what's going on? What are you doing?
I just, it's my show now.
What?
Season 7, Long Night with James Keast.
What happened? What? I left for a samosa emergency and colonialism appeared? That's weird. Sorry, I'm a little winded and I don't know what's going on. We're going to take a break and then Aurora and Jen from Baroness von Sketch Show will be up next. Thanks for being here. Stick around. This episode of Creative Control is brought to you by Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. And we, my son and I, sometimes go to Planet Bean Coffee so I can pick up some coffee. What do you get there?
Well, I like their gelato. It's really good. And for some reason, I'm a kid that likes coffee.
That's true. You do like to have a little slurp of coffee every once in a while. And what goes better with coffee in Guelph than donuts from Hamilton? Granddad's Donuts. Amazing donuts. Do you have a favorite donut?
Yep, it's a Boston cream.
Yeah, those are pretty good, and they've got those at Granddad's. They got good, full-sized, old-fashioned donuts. You can't go wrong. If you want to learn more about these places, and you should, go to planetbeancoffee.com and granddads.ca. Right, sir?
Right.
Welcome back. Hey, how's it going? Welcome back to Long Night. Our next guests are members of a very excellent and acclaimed sketch comedy troupe and TV program called Baroness Von Sketch Show. How acclaimed are they? Well, just this week, Baroness Von Sketch Show won 4 Canadian Screen Awards. And the week is, it's not even over yet. You could win more. Is that right?
No, all our categories are done.
Oh, okay, sorry.
We could steal some, though. I mean, we could mug somebody from an award. I mean, it doesn't matter how you get the award as long as you have it, right?
Exactly, that's true. I'm thrilled they could join us tonight, so please say hello to Aurora Brown and Jennifer Whalen of Baroness Von Sketch Show. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey.
Thank you so much for being here.
It's our pleasure.
You win awards. You don't need to be here. I appreciate you being here.
We wanted to come back. We had that other experience.
Yeah. We hadn't won the awards when you asked us, so it was a different time for us then.
Yeah.
Maybe it will help if we go on that show. Yeah. We spoke, when the show started, we spoke, right?
Yeah. The first season was just airing because we were,
Yeah, that was fun. We had a good time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we may cover some ground that we covered then because when we spoke the last time, I didn't know you as people. You were just coming up. You were young. Baroness Von Sketch Show baby, like the Muppet Babies version.
So young, so very young.
Dewey, we were Dewey.
That's right. So we were all learning about each other. Let's start with the show and how it began. Let's Jen, why don't you tell your version of the story? Aurora will correct it.
Sure.
Where did Baroness Von Sketch Show come from?
It was created in the lab. No, it was not. It began, I guess it's now 6 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
I don't keep track of time.
Of course.
Really, how it began was Meredith McNeil, who is Canadian, but she had gone to England and she had come back to work in Canada and she was doing a show called This Hour is 22 Minutes. In Halifax, Nova Scotia. Yeah, met Carolyn Taylor, we knew Carolyn because we had done Second City, we being Aurora and I.
So you two are friends.
Yes.
So the other two, you're not friends.
No, we fucking hate them. I don't really know. They were like strangers. No. I've known Carolyn for almost 20 years now.
Oh, you had.
She and I had been on stage at Second City together, and Jen was also at Second City, so we've also been friends for a very long time.
Yeah, the three of us knew each other. So the three of us, we had this Second City connection, and then Carolyn and I had both done This Hour Has 22 Minutes. I had left the show at that point, and Carolyn was there, and she met Meredith. And Meredith was kind of wondering where the sketch show was in Canada, because Britain has a long tradition in Canadian.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Canadians are known as being funny, but there was a real culture at that time of don't pitch a sketch show, the networks won't make it, don't do it. And she was like, and also, where are the women, you know,
this is a Canadian perspective, like don't pitch a sketch show to Canadian networks?
Yes, in Canada at the time, there was sort of this idea that, you know, you shouldn't do that. So she wanted to do this, and she and Carolyn wanted to do something similar, and so they chatted, and Carolyn was like, I think I know some people, and so it was really the synergy of these two kind of brilliant humans coming together and then asking us to be involved.
Yeah. That sounds great. That's good. Do you have a perspective, Aurora, on what Jen was saying about why sketch shows weren't something that networks would desire because they seem to be all the rage these days on some level. No, in no small part to what you guys have accomplished, I would say.
I think it does go in waves. Mm-hmm. I will say that I was actually part of a sketch show that was really bad, and I think it actually discouraged people from doing sketch shows.
That's right. You were on Saturday Night Live.
I do think it goes in waves. I mean, and we should say that that's on television. Like, the sketch scene in Canada is very robust, the live sketch scene here, Vancouver, you know, Winnipeg, Edmonton. There's tons of sketch artists, but it just wasn't making it to TV. And I think also just in general, people are afraid to pitch anything in this country, and sketch is one of those things too. And it just had fallen out of fashion. Yeah. But there was a kind of a trendy quality to female-fronted stuff whenever you're in the room. Around that time, and there were people, you know, you'd go in to talk about, like, oh, I have this idea. They'd be like, could it be like Broad City or, you know, something like that? And
right.
So we rode that wave hard, and here we are.
Yeah. It's like, remember when everything was vampires?
Yeah.
Well, we hit it when women were the new vampires.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
You guys produce such a volume of stuff. Like, I watch these episodes of your show, and there's so much stuff going on. How difficult is it to do this show? It seems to me like I watch it as someone who's vaguely in, I'm like seventh tier Canadian media personality and vaguely in show business. I kind of know what goes on behind the scenes. This is a lot of work, isn't it?
It's a ton of work.
It's
long days.
So much work.
Jen saw the sun today, so that was really good.
Yes, we're editing season four, so I'm like a mole person now. And I got out early. I'm like, oh my god, it's a nice day. I almost cried. I'm like, this feels the sun on my skin. People still exist.
To give people an idea, like, we started writing season four last April, mid-April, mm-hmm. and then we shot it between September and December, and editing now, and you will see it in September again.
Yeah, and pre-production in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it takes us the whole year.
It's a blur, isn't
it? Yeah, we write about...
It is a little bit,
how many sketches did we write for season four? Was it like 600 or something? And then
600?
And then we send 200 of those to the network to say which of these, you know, like, what do you like? And then we shot about 165. I want to say
yes,
and
yes.
Like 100 and
I think about 130 will make the show.
But a Baroness von sketch show sketch can be 30 seconds. It can be a couple minutes. It's
We need to rethink that.
It's like, a lot of work.
Yeah, write one long sketch that lasts 10 episodes. It would be a lot less work.
I was like, why did I choose something that would put me in the makeup chair for 4 hours for literally 2 seconds?
That's 2 seconds of screen time. Yeah.
That is fascinating that you bring that up, because I have, as you know, I'm a fan of the show. I follow the show, and I can see production values ramping up a little bit. Mm-hmm. There was a sketch about, and I forgive me if I forget the name. Were you Karen, the coffee sketch? Is that what it's... Yeah, I'm blanking on the name.
Oh, wait. Karen, who was trying to get into the club, and she couldn't...
Isn't there a sketch where you're supposed to get... Denver.
Denver.
Sorry, I'm sorry, I blanked on the name. Denver. And there's just an elaborate costume stuff going... There's like a lot of stuff going on there that maybe, I assume you have more... Do you have more artistic license to try things as the show has gotten more successful?
We've always had an enormous amount of creative control, which is amazing.
Good plug for my podcast.
Yeah, it's a good plug for your podcast. Yeah, so we came into it sort of... knowing that we wanted that, and we'd all had long careers before that and seen the ways that a great idea can kind of fall apart. So it was really important to us. But yeah, something like that was a really fun sketch to do. But when you know, you're writing it and you're talking about it, Carolyn Taylor wrote it. It was just a genius based on a thing that actually happened to me. And not that I turned into Denver, but I got my cuffs back and it
said,
was Denver.
I'm Jennifer, and they wrote...
And they gave me Denver. And then I was like, God, who would I be if I was Denver? And Carolyn went... but so Denver was described as being kind of Paris Hilton-like when she transforms. But so when you write it, you're like, oh, okay, that's funny. And then on the day, I was like, what that meant was a team of poor, like, God bless their souls. They had to paint me. I'm a very pale person, and they had to paint me head to toe with fake tan.
Orange tan kind of stuff.
If you watch the sketch again closely, you can see when I'm in the coffee shop and I turn, you can see a brown handprint on my ass where somehow I've touched my own ass with my not quite dry thing. And it made me crazy. Like, I got all the contouring, got the thing. I was very judgmental about it. And the minute it was done, I could not stop taking pictures of myself.
You looked so good on camera.
I could not. I was like, I want this all the time.
It was a shocking amount of contour. Like, I was looking at you thinking, like, who would ever do this? But then remember, like, when we were, like, doing the elevator scene, a woman, like who looked like you, like she was for real in the wild wearing all that, and we were like, oh, okay, you know, like that.
Yeah, so we shot that at Humber College, and it was the day that you sign up for classes. Yeah. So this is a Wednesday afternoon at about 2 o'clock, and all the crew are like, Jen, oh my God, Denver's on the elevator, Denver's on the elevator. And she was more tan than me, more blonde than me, wearing a pinker outfit than me. And I was like, wait, this is your Wednesday? What is Saturday night like? Holy moly.
Well, we talked about sort of the era that the show was born and maybe perceptions of why people weren't doing sketch. You mentioned creative control. You mentioned you've always had free reign. I think there might be a perception that has occurred where people think at the CBC, they're not going to get into edgy comedy. But then I see what you've done. By the way, Aurora, I don't know who wrote this sketch where you're basically giving your child a bedtime story.
Yeah, I wrote that.
I don't know. Has everyone? Do you know the sketch I mean? Does anyone? No. Okay, that's awkward.
I could probably reenact it. No.
It went viral. I would say.
It did a bit.
It's genius.
Oh, thank you.
I love that sketch more than it. Like I'm. Sorry, you're great too. But this sketch. So basically, you wrote a thing that just sort of foretells the apocalypse, and it's like I'm a parent, right? So I'm putting my kids to bed. I'm like, yeah, everything's gonna be fine, and then I think about ecological collapse, and I get very depressed. So good job tapping into that.
Thank you. Yeah, that was. I have a son, and he's almost 9, and you know, you have the urge to have a kid, and then the kid gets there, and you're like, oh fuck, what have we done? Like, why did I bring this kid when all this is going on? And you can, you know, we don't do too much that's super topical because of the time between creating and writing, but you do notice more references to climate change kind of making its way into the show, and that one is, you know, like my daughter asks me what she'll be, and I say, like, oh, first she'll be a doctor, but then the ocean currents will shift, and there'll be waves of migration and crop failure, so you'll sift through garbage for things and, you know, raw materials, and then the people of your sewer tribe will get an incurable cold, and you'll cradle the bodies as they die. And which so there you go. That's the Coles Notes version of something that's slightly longer. We did actually have to, I think we had to fight slightly to get
this
that one.
This is what
in.
I'm getting at.
Yes, yes, we
that,
did.
I that saw one. That and I'm like, whole, like, that seems to be a sea change in what the CBC would do. And that's maybe a perception. I worked for CBC as well, but there is this perception that they play it safe. Your show is not safe. And I marvel at that. Something's going on there.
We did have I would say that we, like, 85% of what we want to put up is generally great with them. And then there's like 15% of stuff. But to let you know, I think that they've begun to trust us a little bit more. Starbucks, Denver, that was supposed to be shot the year before, but we ended up, it was kind of a production thing that we were like, it'll be worth it for time, and it didn't work for time. And then there are other sketches that we really wanted to have happen in first season, and they didn't go for them. And then after we'd had a couple seasons under our belt, we're like, how about this one again? And they were like, okay, you know. And so occasionally there's ones that they were like, we're not going to put that one on the air. But I would say we have an amazing, it's a very satisfying amount of, like, you know, because as a creator, you want to, like, I want to say this.
So comfortable that, you know the words you can't say on television. And they're pretty good. We you know, we get some fucks and some shits. This year. There's a lot of motherfucks. And they're like, okay, guys. Right. Yeah. We got to know, like, okay, guys, I don't know how many times we have to say this. You can't say that. You're going to have to bleep that or do something. It's like, oh, right, I guess we get a little too.
We can say fuck, but we can't say motherfuck.
Well, but I mean, like, inherently, fucking creates mothers. So I don't really get it.
No, that seems like a weird
and fathers.
At least a double standard. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Why
James,
is fatherfuck not a thing?
I don't think people say that. That's just not a thing we say. Fatherfucker?
Yeah, fatherfucker.
Who
it's
wants to fuck?
It's kind of satisfying.
No one wants to fuck a dad. That's my viewpoint.
You know,
that
Ryan Gosling's a dad.
And now we know something about you.
Yeah. It's more about me.
I really...
I gotta go talk to my wife. Anyway, please, James, you had something to say?
I have a question, and specifically, I mean, we were talking about basically what you can get away with or what the network will, where the network will put the brakes on. I'm more interested in the sort of the internal process, and I'm thinking about a specific sketch from the last season, unless I'm losing my mind. And it's the... you're all cops and you're dismissing the investigation of sex crimes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And it's one of the greatest things that I've ever seen in comedy. It was one of those things that I immediately went, this is, you can't make this sketch with men. Like, you couldn't. Mm-hmm. It's fundamental to the sketch that you're all women cops, but also it's a very delicate balance of comedy and the comedy being from pretty horrific ideas. And I'm just wondering if you could talk about, if there was a network reaction to that sketch, but just internally the process of writing that and finding the right tone, and how much of that is in the writing and the work, and how much of that is in the editing, and and just the struggle to like really dial that in, and how you guys have sort of evolved to that point as a troupe.
Well, I think I have to, you know, give a huge shout out to Meredith McNeil. She wanted to do that sketch. She spearheaded it, and she was so dedicated to making sure that we got it right. You know, she really, it was an idea that she talked about in the first week of the room, and it went through a lot of different hands and a lot of different, just to make sure that everybody was like, okay, are we getting this across? Are we getting this across? And there was a lot of like fact checking and making sure we had our facts right and making sure that the tone was right. It was kind of a labor of love, but we all agreed that it was important. It was really important. And then we were like, and we knew it was risky because it's such a fine line, but we're like, if we can do this, you know, and you know, bring this thing to light and make this joke, make jokes about this really awful thing. The sketch is about how many rape kits go untested. Yeah. And so we actually had, like, we had multiple endings at one point because we weren't sure. And then the network was, they were supportive through it. But then when we actually went to, actually came to air, then things got a bit weird because our social media company was like, okay, we have to have a protocol here because they are like, you don't understand. The trolls who troll this stuff, you don't fuck around with them. Yeah. It's serious. We're going to shut down all commenting because what happens is if somebody says something, then they follow the people who've commented. I had no idea people were this awful. Like it was really, so there was a lot of like at that point, you know, discussion about, okay, how do we do this? And also, you know, discussion about, will this be triggering? Do we have to have a trigger warning? And then also we wanted to be responsible and say, okay, here are our numbers to call at the end. And then also just discovering that there wasn't a central number in Canada. It's different in each province. Mm. And how are you going to navigate that? Because we want to make sure that everybody has the access and that some provinces are better served than others. So it was like this kind of crazy eye-opening thing. But the network was supportive. And, you know, I think that they were concerned and concerned for us that people might come after us. But it ended up being fine. Mm-hmm. And you know, there wasn't really a backlash to it. But I would say, again, that was because everybody was so careful about trying to get it right. So, yeah, thank you so much. It was a real labor of love, and it was really important to us, and it was a huge risk.
I'm going to just tell them the Heather story. As Jen said, like so many people, like everybody in the room took a look at it. It was based on that. It was actually two issues. It wasn't just the rape kits. It was the whole unfounded thing. Robin Doolittle did a report for people who haven't seen the scene, about how many rape charges are deemed unfounded the moment the woman walks in the door. And it was like something like 50% or something like that in some police stations. And if you don't know, unfounded means they take a look at her and how she's reporting and think, I think she's lying. And so like half of them were just like not being investigated. So that's a real comedy gem right there. We were really excited about that. And so like we were even, like the statistics, we were doing ADR to make sure the statistics were as good as they could be. So what happened, we found out much later because it meant a lot and we tried really hard to get it right and the tone of it and all that kind of stuff. The rape kit Jenga tower at the end, that kind of stuff. Yeah. So we found out later that the lawyers at CBC, the legal department is there to protect, copyright infringement and litigation and all that kind of stuff. And they took a look and they're like, we can't even do this. I think they might have even done that at the script stage. I can't remember. But then Heather Conway, who at the time was president or what's it? Yes. Yeah. She found out that they were saying that, and she specifically went to them and said, no, they should do this. They said, but the cops might be, they might be mad. She's like, well, they should be if this is how things are going. And so it was great to get that, but we didn't even know how specifically we'd been supported at the time, but just so that people know, it's not just that the creators have to be into doing stuff and, really giving it. You do need those people up top, really supporting you, and it makes a difference, all levels of things. And so we were very happy to find that out. You know, I think she, like the words that I was quoted was like, those ladies can do whatever they want. And I thought, oh, that's really nice.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so that was our, that's our hilarious, heartfelt kind of yeah. But we, it, thank you. We did work really hard. And
I do think that bringing up this sketch in particular, like your show does this remarkable thing where it balances kind of minutiae, like comedic fodder, like the fodder of minutiae, but there's this always, I feel like, sociocultural, sociopolitical commentary going on there too. And it's a fantastic show. So you're editing season 4.
Yes.
We don't know what's going to come of this at this point, when it's going to be out.
I would assume sometime in the fall, but we don't know our air date yet. And I think, you know, CBC is, you know, they'll figure out their lineup and let us know. But we were a fall show this year, so I mean,
I think that's the plan.
I think probably will be in the fall again, but
seems reasonable.
It will air at some point.
Weirdly, the last time we were all, I think, as far as I know, the last time we were all in the same room was at the TIFF Lightbox during JFL 42. You guys did an interview. I wasn't on stage with you, but
yes.
I was in the audience and in September, and you announced that season 4, just so you know, like, we're doing season 4, and everyone cheered. Are we doing season 5? I just want the similar applause.
I can't say that's
a great suggestion.
I think there should be a season 5.
I would love there to be a season 5.
I'd like that, yeah. Okay, well, so I was confused. Do you have to go back to the Screen Awards at all? Like, are you just done?
Tonight? No.
No, we're on Sunday. We're doing a little bit for the Screen Awards, so tune in if you want to see us.
So I'm confused. This is a multi-day award show?
It's a multi, yeah.
Yeah. It's like 4 days. Like, so there's the day for the news and the factual, and then there's creative storytelling, which is our night, which we won. And then there's the digital night, and then there's the gala night, which is the actually, like, super famous people pay attention to these awards.
The televisable.
So the televisable, like, these people are hotter. They're like a level of attractiveness up, so they're like, yeah, we can devote a night to that.
Okay, so you'll be on that on Sunday night?
Is
that
right? But in a comic way, we would be there.
Oh, okay.
In a hot way. And I mean, we'll try, like, I'll put on a nice dress, but it won't be the same.
I'm so excited about what I'm wearing.
I'm excited about what I'm wearing.
Yeah. This is exciting. I can't wait to see it, I hope. Yeah. All right, where can people learn more about Baroness von Sketch Show, or you too? Do you want to tell people where they can go on the internet?
Oh, gosh, I guess that means I should know the website address. We do have a channel
Baroness
on YouTube.
Baroness von Sketch.
Yes.
On Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And who are you on social media? Who are you on social media?
Well, I'm Aurora Brown on Twitter. I'm Alola Brown on Instagram. And I'm on Facebook, and so I have a lot of places that you can get. But yeah, we all have our individual. But I think if you go to the Baroness, like Instagram or Twitter, you can find all of us.
It will just complete, and it will find. Yeah.
By the way, I don't want everyone just to search for you. This wasn't the plan. Like, I just thought it might be nice if.
I want everyone to search for Aurora.
Follow your exploits, you know. On the,
yeah.
And Jen, you're on there. I know you're on there.
Yeah. Okay. Because I won't remember because I never look myself up. So I think,
you know, if somebody
Instagram
wanted to put Jen and I on a gaming podcast.
Oh yeah,
Sean,
we were game
so
nerds.
Are we have so many
stories.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. I was playing video games
there
before
you
I came here today.
Sean,
she was
there.
And I'm embarrassed to tell you what I was playing. So
what were you playing?
I'm really obsessed with Stardew Valley. It's so boring.
Oh,
and I thank you. Oh. Right. Okay, but here's what's funny. Okay, Stardew Valley nerds. So I have a stepson, but I don't have biological children, and I was kind of ambivalent about having children. And I'm ambivalent about it in the game. I married Elliot, and he's like, let's have a baby. I'm like, I don't know. I've got a lot of plans for the farm. I don't know if I want to have a baby.
This could be a sketch.
You're talking about, like, you know, like the magazines, you had to take screenshots. In the 90s, at some point, I was playing Myst. And I think it was Miss 2. Mm-hmm. And so we're playing on my roommate's CD. You know, it was like a CD-ROM you put in. And we were really stuck at the last part of it. And Myst is crazy. Like, who's here has played it?
I have.
Yes, right?
Yes.
Like, it gets into your mind. So it was like before, like, I think chat rooms existed, but it wasn't fast enough kind of thing. So we were so stuck. So we're like, let's call the world's biggest bookstore. So we did, to see if they had a thing. And it was late at night. And the girl, we were like, hey, would you mind going to the section? Is there like a Myst, like, you know, walkthrough book? She's like, okay, it's not very busy. So she like walked over, got the book, and brought it back. She's like, okay, go to the dock and click on the mailbox. And we're like, thank you so much. And it totally worked. But that was like our like lo-fi thing. And also, I just, this is like too much. But like, then you were talking about like the vintage tech thing. So like, I've just started rereading again the Neuromancer trilogy. And like, how many of William Gibson's books are like based on people looking for old tech, or, you know, like old calculators and stuff. So I feel like we all have a lot to talk about. And Well,
that's an interesting point, because we're going to take a very short break, and then Sean Hatton is going to join us for a little panel discussion.
Oh, I should have said that. Oh, well.
Yeah, no, it's fine. And just before we go to the break, what we've been doing for the panel this season is we take a break. When we come back, I'm going to ask the audience for a topic suggestion. Ooh. So think of that. When we come back, I'm just going to open the floor. If anyone has a topic they want this panel to talk about, shout it out, and we'll get to it. Okay? Everyone clear? Think about it. We're going to take a break. And we'll be back with more. How about a hand for Jen and Aurora of Baroness von Stetcher? This episode of Creative Control is brought to you by Pizza Truck Darrow and The Bookshelf, two fine establishments in Guelph, Ontario. What do you like about Pizza Trocadero, sir?
Well, I love the pepperoni pizza. It's awesome.
And do you like to wash it all down with a specific drink?
Oh, yes. I like the Brio.
Oh, I love the Brio as well. You can learn more about Pizza Trocadero at trocaderoguelph.ca. Best crust in the city, by the way.
Yep.
And you can call them for pickup or delivery at 519-829-2444. What is the Bookshelf?
It's not a physical bookshelf. It's a bookstore that also has a bar in it and a movie theater.
That is absolutely correct. And they're located at 41 Quebec Street in Guelph. And they are the best. You can learn more about them at bookshelf.ca. That's right. Pizza Trocadero and the Bookshelf. Pizza, books, movies, drinks. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, we're back. We're back on Long Night. We don't have a lot of time for a panel discussion, but since we have such an amazing panel here, I thought we should take a moment to talk. Oh, God. Sean, did you plug in the Omnicord?
Sure did.
Yeah, I did.
There's a power light.
The shit out of the Omnicord.
It's going to be a musical panel. Okay, Sean, just let me get a topic before you soundtrack us. Just
sure.
A moment. Okay, does anyone have something they want to hear us talk about? Anything at all? Just shout it out. Okay. Anything else?
Maybe a little niche.
What was it? Neuromancer?
Neuromancer. It's the
William Gibson.
The William Gibson novel.
Sure. Let's talk about that.
Sure.
What do you want to say? What do you want to say about Neuromancer?
I want to talk about Myst a little bit first, because
sure,
there was a weird time in video games.
Is this Sierra Myst? What kind of Myst?
Yeah,
is
it's Myst. You know, the CD-ROM. No one had seen graphics like this before.
Yeah.
And, you know, the sound as well. CD-ROM.
Yeah.
Like CD quality sound from your computer. Yeah. Like a lot of computers didn't even have speakers then, right? Like
you
have
to
get like a sound.
Yeah,
like a Sound Blaster card. Then buy those like $20 Radio Shack speakers. So even then, it wasn't really that good.
So many things you're talking about that don't exist anymore, I think.
Exactly. But like, the game was so esoteric. Like, what am I supposed to do?
Did you get through it without doing any cheats?
No, I don't think
anyone
could.
Did anybody ever?
No, I don't think you could. Oh, no, my friend's dad tried to play it, and as far as I know, he's still trying to play it,
because
he's like, no, I will figure this out myself, and
I remember, like, I think number 4 is the one, you know, like, playing along, suddenly Brad Dourif shows up. I'm like, I want that guy's career. He's like in movies, he's won Academy Awards, he's on Deadwood, he's in Myst. Like, come on. Like,
Myst 4,
I would love to be in a video game. Yeah.
And before Star Wars became cool again, like, Mark Hamill was in Wing Commander. Anyway, I don't know where I was going with that, but
no,
it's a nice blast from the past.
Well, I want to try to address the Neuromancer thing, maybe in connected with Vintage Tech Hunters, and maybe with your show, because we didn't get into it as much, but this erasure that I'm talking. Remember, we used to collect. If we liked comedy, we'd have the DVD box set.
Yes.
And we'd collect. Maybe we'd read books. Remember, we used to read books, like actual books.
I still do.
Yeah.
And so we'd have all this stuff, and you'd collect it, and you'd have your little library. And now you've got a comedy show. And it's, I assume, like, is it, can you buy a Blu-ray set of Baroness von Sketch?
No. You cannot DVD. Buy a physical
so
hard copy.
So it's sort of ephemeral. It's sort of weirdly just a thing that's here now, and hopefully it's around. How do you feel about that? Like, you're making so much content, as we discussed,
And I don't know. My friend Matt, he was saying, you know, like, you know, when the apocalypse finally does come, no one's going to know what actually happened in this point in history because so little of it is transmitted by the printed word. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how will we know what tweets and, like, you know, like everyday drama and all that kind of stuff? And so I actually started sending a postcard. And it's funny because, like, so many of the things that are Neuromancer, people don't know this novel. This is like a seminal novel that it was like 1982 or something. So William Gibson wrote it. He coined the term cyberspace, I believe.
Cyberpunk as well, I believe.
So many of the... He goes into minutiae of how people dress and why they are, and like there's stuff, you know, the kibble or kimmel or whatever it's called from Blade Runner, and like there's just stuff all around and all these layers of things, but we don't... Like, we actually have stuff we could put on a Blu-ray. We have scenes that didn't make it, bloopers... You know, all that kind of stuff. Like, there's a body of stuff, but it's like, how are we going to do that? Like, I guess we'll have to...
You know, unfortunately, I think what has to happen is that the show has to get to the point where it's so popular that people want to buy that. Like, we're just not there. I think it has to get to, like, the point where people get obsessive and want to collect it, and then maybe that will happen. But yeah. I agree, it's kind of weird. I feel okay that there's no physical... thing of it right now. Like, mm-hmm. I just feel like that's, we're just not in that moment. We're in this binge, talk about it, you know, orally share what you, you know, I was in LA a couple of weeks ago, and I went to go see an art show of Annie Leibovitz's early photographs, and it was really funny because I, like, my thing is I just eavesdrop all the time, so I'm really sorry if you've been having a personal conversation. I was totally listening, but that's how I get comedy. And I was like walking around, I'm listening to what everyone's talking about, and all they were talking about is what they were watching on Netflix. Like, everybody.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and I was just like, oh my God, this is a weird cultural moment. But at the same point, it means that, like, we're talking about stories and we're sharing them. It's kind of beautiful in a weird way.
Mm-hmm. We are talking more. Like, we're communicating about what we consume. But it's just like when you watch Sean's show, it's fascinating the stuff you find and what it says about our past. And like we were just saying, like, I don't know if our present is going to have a past, if that makes any sense.
Right.
In the future, like, no one's going to be able to pick the stuff we're rooting. What you're rooting through is stuff from the early to mid 20th century, mostly, right?
Yeah. I mean, in some cases, we're finding things that are, you know, over 100 years old, and they've still got some, like, technological aspect to them. But yeah, a lot of technology today, you know, I can't speak about the media content because we don't really look for that stuff for the show. But it is like, it's very disposable, and it's like, you know, once you don't have this phone charger cord anymore, that phone's not going to charge anymore. So technology changed very slowly for so long, and now it's just so fast, and like the things that we can do with what we have now is incredible. But it's nice to go back to, like, this one appliance does one thing only.
I was reading the novels, actually, because I've gotten to the point where it's like, I am on Reddit too much. I'm reading too many tiny little things, and my, you know, it's getting faster and faster and faster. And I do love reading, and I was like, I would like to, like, coast on a long story right now. I would like that a little bit more.
So people have tried to convince me about e-readers, and I've had them and stuff like that, but I actually like the physical sensation of a book.
Me
I like
too.
Everything, but also, you cannot bring that shit into a bath.
Nope.
No, you just can't. And everybody has dropped their book in the bath at least once.
Oh, right. Sure.
And what if the power goes out?
And what if the power goes out? But I also do wonder, too, like, just about, like, I worked in a record store for a bazillion years, and I remember when I was working in a record store, it was records, and then CDs came in, and then the records slowly went away, and now they're back in such a huge way, and I had totally forgotten how much pleasure I got out of browsing for records, out of looking for, like, the magic of opening up a record and going, oh my God, will there be lyrics?
All the lyrics are printed, and when they're a double album, they open up.
Yeah.
There's something cool there.
Yeah. I wonder if we will come back to a thing, because with DVDs and box sets, having worked in a record store, I know a lot of it was about the extra material and the things that nobody else got. So I think it probably will come back around, because I think we're acquisitive by nature, and people, especially men, really like to collect things and are completionists, so they like to have all of the things.
I want to show you my house in Skyrim, and you can call.
I know. Okay, so Aurora and I, we're being deep game nerds. Like, Aurora, I remember she told me one day, she's like, I just took everything out of my house and I made a pile, and it took me, you know, 12 hours, and I crashed the computer.
I did do that in Skyrim. I tried to walk onto the tundra and drop everything I owned just to see what it would look like, and it broke the Xbox.
Yeah, so we have these conversations, and the other two baronesses just are like, look at us like we're nuts, but we know.
Yeah, we know.
Yeah.
Stardew Valley is a great game, by the way. One of the top 10 selling Switch games.
We gotta cut this off because the people have to do other things.
Oh, okay. Well, there's other people
it's
coming.
It's just a video game bonanza. Did you guys ever play Mike Tyson's Punch Out? I used to play that.
Yes, I did.
On Nintendo? Anybody?
NES?
Good game. Sorry, that's all I can contribute to the gaming right now. But Sean's trying to school me on the gaming. That's like the nature
of
our
relationship. Sean, I'm going to follow you on Twitter, and then we can talk about gaming.
We'll do something gaming related.
If anyone wants to talk about God of War, I'm available. I can talk about God of War a lot.
We have to wrap up the show. That's one of my jobs, is to actually start the show and end the show. I thank you all for being here. Thanks to Sean Hatton, Aurora Brown, Jennifer Whalen from Baroness Von Sketch Show, The Bicycles, James Keast, everybody at Long Winter. That's the end of our season. Thank you so much. If we're not canceled, we'll be back next year. Have a good night. Go enjoy Workman Arts. Thank you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.